temptation, promiscuity, marriage, homosexuality. These are some of the issues addressed in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Sexual Morality in a Christless World. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Learn the truth about sexual morality from a reasoned, Christian perspective with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Sexual Morality in a Christless World.
Now, people who know me well know I'm a pretty basic guy. I'm a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order.
That's conservatism in a nutshell, that we are preserving the traditions of human society that, though tainted by sin, at least we're failing in opposition to those moral standards.
Look, Martin Luther King Jr. in the Civil Rights Movement was all about bringing the faith into the public square.
The Christian lives not by the words of the pastor, but by the words of God. And the pastor, if he's not speaking the words of God, well, who knows what he's doing? But he's not being a pastor of Jesus. He's not serving his church.
Northern Illinois Chainsaw Drivers, love, issues, etc.
I know what I mean when I use the term. I come from the Lutheran perspective, and the term evangelical Catholic has kind of a special meaning among confessional Lutherans. It means that we are the best of both. We are genuinely Catholic in that we believe the faith once for all delivered to the saints that has always been believed at all times, all places, by all Christians. So creedal Christian is a good way of describing that. But we're also evangelical in that, in the proper sense of the term, the original sense of the term, that we focus our theology is focused on the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ saving sinners solely by his grace through faith and for his sake alone. So I know what that means coming out of my mouth, evangelical Catholic. The term's also used by, well, Mike Pence, for instance, who is Donald Trump's running mate, governor of Indiana. He says evangelical Catholic. What does he mean by that term? And then when the media uses that term, evangelical Catholic, what spin do they put on it? That's a question that we need to answer. We'll be doing so here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. We are coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. Terry Matting will join us here in the first half hour of the program. We'll talk about media use of the term evangelical Catholic. Pastor Tom Baker will be our guest for a Sunday school lesson after that. The book of Job, particularly the first chapters of the book of Job. Pastor Ted Giese will join us to review the movie Ghostbusters, Answering the Call. And then we're going to do our series Christ in the Old Testament. The church remembers Ezekiel today, so we'll do the same in our series Christ in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. He joins us to talk about media coverage of the term evangelical Catholic. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
The term that is being used even by Mike Pence himself is evangelical Catholic for his belief system. What does he mean by that as far as we can tell?
Well, I kind of think that he simply is trying to be kind to his family and to his background. I know there are some scholars of life there in his home state that kind of argue that. In other words, I grew up Catholic. I had a religious experience in college. I met my wife. My wife is an evangelical. I'm at church with her. And then kind of as a Protestant, you start trying to kind of create your own faith. And at that point, it's easier to say, you know, I never stopped saying that I was a Catholic. I just go to an evangelical church now, so I am an evangelical Catholic or a Catholic evangelical. I have known a few people who were raised Orthodox that now go to evangelical churches, and they'll say things like, well, I never stopped being Orthodox. This is just where I go to church now. But I've never heard them call themselves an evangelical Orthodox Christian or something like that. The evangelical Catholic thing, without knowing, you know, without being able to interview him about that subject, in his case, it seems just to be his attempt to describe what has gone on in his life. Now, what do other people say he means? Or you can get into all kinds of interpretations, the most cynical of which is people just simply saying, hey, there's a lot of Catholics in Indiana and there's a lot of evangelicals in Indiana. Why would you want to tick off one or the other? Why not try to claim yourself as some sort of hybrid for political reasons? So maybe it's personal, maybe it's political. I think you'd have to ask the man. But it's very obvious that his Christian faith has influenced his career and his views a lot, which only makes the controversies around him involving the Religious Liberty Bill and other issues so, you know, so pressing from the last year or so.
What does the media mean when it takes up that term, evangelical Catholic?
Well, I mean, we have a famous example, which I've quoted many times at Get Religion. And frankly, the first time I encountered this term as a reporter was a decade plus ago when Time magazine did a famous cover story, and I think it was the 25 most powerful evangelicals in America. And as I flipped through that magazine for the first time, long ago that I was flipping instead of scrolling, as I flipped through the magazine, I kind of like went, what? When one of the first ones I hit was Senator Rick Santorum. You know, at that time, one of the gang of young Republicans in the Senate who was causing so much trouble for the Republican establishment. And here he was, one of the top 25 most powerful evangelicals in America. And the problem, of course, is that he's a Roman Catholic. Anybody you know, anybody who knows anything about Rick Santorum knows that he's a very traditional Roman Catholic, especially on the social issues that were so prominent during the John Paul era. So much so that when his wife wrote a book about the death of a child they had born, they had been advised by doctors not to carry Gabriel to term. She wrote a book on her letters to her unborn child, Letters to Gabriel, and the foreword was written by Mother Teresa. In fact, it was the last thing she wrote before she died. Well, but you never heard Santorum call himself an evangelical Catholic. Later in that same list, they had the former Lutheran pastor, Father Richard John Newhouse, Lutheran turned Roman Catholic. They had him in the list and it openly stated that he was a Roman Catholic priest. So I was really mystified about this, and I called up Time magazine and ended up talking to a publicist for the issue who kind of famously told me in a little mini quote I've used many times that, yeah, they knew Santorum was a Catholic, but that he voted evangelical. And I think that's the key right there. There's, in other words, if you hold certain types of social views on moral issues related to mostly to sexuality, but whatever, abortion, traditional marriage, etc., those are not actually Catholic views. They're evangelical views, so Catholics who hold them are voting evangelical. So who would say that in light of the fact that the Catechism is clearly on the side of the more traditional Catholics on those issues? I mean, the clear teachings of the Roman Catholic Church on those issues are very easy to find on the Vatican website, and especially back during those eras with previous popes. Except, as you and I have discussed many times, the problem with Francis is not what he says. The problem is when you only quote one thing he says instead of the 7, 8, 9, 10 other things reaffirming the doctrine. So my theory here is that for many journalists, it's back to that old game, who's good, who's bad, who's smart, who's dumb. So when you have beliefs that you consider wrong and you consider dumb, are you going to call all Catholics dumb? Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense, especially for a lot of liberal Catholics who are in newsrooms. So thus, these people are voting evangelical. They're not really Catholics. They don't believe the wholeness of the Catholic faith, which is so nuanced and complex that, you know, you really don't have to believe that stuff because your own conscience in Vatican II says that you can do whatever you want, et cetera, et cetera. So you create this kind of a slur these folks are evangelical Catholics. These are Catholics, but they're not really Catholics. They're voting evangelical. That was a lot of kind of stream of consciousness stuff there, but I think that's what's going on with the press. In other words, the word evangelical is the bad word. It's essentially political. And besides, Democrats have a really hard time winning the presidency if they don't carry the Catholic vote, if they don't hold the Catholic vote together. And Republicans, of course, can't win the presidency if they don't at least split the Catholic vote down the middle and get a high percentage of the active church-going Catholics, if not all of them. So the fact that the Catholic vote is the most important swing vote in American politics, it's really important for the press to maybe not blame things on Catholics. You just keep blaming the evangelicals. But if they're Catholics who hang out with evangelicals, then there's this other term for them. Just an aside, years ago, the John Green, the great pollster at the University of Dayton that I quote so often, who works a lot with the Pew Forum, we were talking about the upcoming election, and this would have been the first time Obama ran for president, and he made the comment, I think once again we're going to have an election where all that matters in America is how Catholics in Ohio who go to church once a month instead of once a week vote. Now, did you follow that?
Explain it to me.
Ohio, the ultimate swing state, and he was assuming that the very active Catholics would vote Republican again. So the issue in Ohio was how many marginal cultural Catholics went Republican or Democrat. So he didn't just have the Catholic vote as the swing. He had a segment of the Catholic vote in one state ultimately deciding the presidency, which is pretty nuanced, but that's how important the Catholic voters and all of their different niches and subgroups, that's how important they are.
So this term, just to kind of clarify it here, the term from the pen of the media, evangelical Catholic, essentially means Catholics, people who are Catholic according to religious affiliation, but are essentially disloyal to the agenda of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, in other words, the bad guys are the evangelicals. Catholics can be good, they can be bad, we all know some of which, but the word evangelical is the political term you attach to that to make sure that people know that these are conservatives who are kind of the bad guys.
Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Thursday, July the 21st. We're talking about media use of the term evangelical Catholic. When we come back, what about just looking at things like Mike Pence's national right to life rating? Stay tuned.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your confessional Lutheran nonprofit or church need a new website? Let WordSites help you for free. WordSites is a volunteer-led group of technology and marketing gurus who have come together to help their fellow Lutherans. With the support of an effective website, you can clearly proclaim Christ and Him crucified to the digital world that we live in. To submit your organization for consideration or to learn more, visit wordsites.org. WordSites, your confessional Lutheran website, reformed.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word and his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media's use of the term evangelical Catholic. Terry, I'm wondering if the media could simply just resort to some simple factual questions, like could they just look up Mike Pence's National Right to Life rating and say, okay, here's what he appears to believe on this issue or that issue?
Well, I think you can in that sense, which once again we're applying a political template here, but I think essentially for the media this is a political term. Now, and that's kind of their problem with it, that they think Spence is simply being cynical, you know, in an attempt to hang on to as many voters as possible. I think it's important to say that there are people who use the term in a more serious way. There are, for example, Episcopalians who call themselves Anglo-Catholic, and that's a historic branch of Anglicanism. And they're talking about the compromise between Protestantism and Catholicism. Well, during the Charismatic Renewal Movement in particular, as many Episcopalians became involved in Pentecostal and Charismatic forms of faith, you began to hear Episcopalians say, well, we're evangelical and we're Catholic. Now, they didn't mean that in a denominational sense. They were still saying they were Anglicans or Episcopalians. But they were talking about the great streams of the church, Protestant, Catholic, Pentecostal, evangelical. So they were saying we are evangelical and Catholic at the same time. Then you have a Catholic scholar named, more of a public intellectual named George Weigel, the biographer, the chosen biographer, the official biographer of Pope John Paul II, who uses the term evangelical Catholic to talk about the kind of enthusiastic Catholicism, the muscular Catholicism of the John Paul II era. And since Weigel is highly involved in the movement called Evangelicals and Catholics Together, which was an attempt to put those two great streams of Christianity on the same page in terms of advocating certain types of beliefs in the public square. Now, they can talk all they want about how they want to stand up together in public life on behalf of abortion, euthanasia, traditional marriage, etc., but the press is going to see that as political activism alone. So when someone like a George Weigel uses the term, no matter how much he defines it in terms of theology, it's, again, going to be viewed as the only real force in the world and the only thing that really matters, which is politics. I was looking up this afternoon. I was looking up a column I wrote long ago, back in 2002, called Krispy Kreme Catholics and the Baptist Vatican. And it was an interview with Father Bob Dalton in Nashville, who was the official Roman Catholic representative to what folks in Nashville call the Baptist Vatican, which is the Southern Baptist headquarters. And I was in Nashville at the time I did the interview with him. I didn't talk to him by telephone. And the two of us walked around in the headquarters of the Southern Baptist Convention as he kind of just made his rounds. And he told me he thought it was interesting that there was a point earlier that year where he would walk into the offices of major leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention, and a copy of John Paul II's Veritatis Splendor, the Splendor of Truth, would be sitting on their desk with yellow sticky notes out the side. That all of a sudden, Southern Baptists were reading the Pope on the issue of absolute truth and eternal truth and transcendent truth, and they were trying to quote the Pope more often. He told me that there was a pretty deep South guy who stopped him in the hall one day to compliment him on a statement that had come out from John Paul II, and said to him, you know, that pope of yours, he sure knows how to pope. And how he interpreted that was, you know, the pope does have a pretty big bully pulpit, and if he uses it well, that's really poping. That's really being the pope. So you did have that era where Baptists, for the first time, were beginning to say, maybe we can get along with Catholics on these issues. And, of course, Chuck Colson, the late Chuck Colson, was a key figure in that, as was the late Richard John Newhouse that I mentioned earlier. So I think those people would have not have called themselves evangelical Catholics. But Weigel took out of that era that the Catholics who, like, enthusiastically believed their faith and enthusiastically wanted to share it and defend it, he called that a kind of muscular evangelical Catholicism that was emerging in that era. So it wasn't evangelical a noun coupled with Catholicism another noun. It was evangelical as an adjective attached to Catholic. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah. Terry, why can't the media simply ask simple questions like, where do you worship and how often do you worship there, to get the answers
to
these
questions?
You know
what? I don't really have any idea in this case. I think back when Jimmy Carter was going to church as a candidate and people would go and listen to him teach Sunday school and whatever else, that he was welcoming that. And, of course, pre-9/11, the president, you know, Jimmy Carter taught Sunday school in Washington. And you could, I'm sure, pass through a security check, but you could just go to church with Jimmy Carter. I mean, that wasn't any big deal. After 9/11, even someone like George W. Bush was primarily going to church in kind of a more secure setting with pastors that he respected coming up to Camp David. Frankly, I think that also had something to do with him being kind of being a conservative, even someone out of the evangelical expression of United Methodism. Although even traditional United Methodism is, of course, an evangelical expression of faith. I don't think W. Bush went to church much in Washington because there weren't any Methodist churches he wanted to attend other than one very prominent evangelical-minded black United Methodist church. But people who were close to the president told me that he was scared to go there because people would have thought he was going to a black church just for political reasons, to be kind of hip. So why don't people just kind of stay outside the governor's mansion in Indiana on a Sunday morning and see where he goes? I mean, if this is a big part of his political identity and you're struggling to know what to label him, why not just do some basic journalism research here? Where does he spend his time? Where does he spend his money? And what church does he go to when it comes time to make his decision? I can't understand why this is so hard in this particular case, unless the governor has said something like, I really don't want you to follow me. I don't want people in my family to get hurt, and all that's off the record. Unless there's some other factor here, I don't know what the problem is.
Well, you also ask rhetorically, is it hard to ask faith questions? And I guess I would modify your question and boomerang it back to you. Are the media capable of asking faith questions?
They are in some circumstances. I mean, when you're trying to find out something bad about somebody, it's really easy to find out where they go to church. A lot of people, you know, I've argued in the past with athletes who play the God card that, you know, if everybody's going to question their faith, once again, why don't we just treat this as a journalism question and try to find out how active they are? Who's their pastor? Who are the religious leaders who are most influencing them? It shouldn't be that hard in the age of Google to see who these people are quoting, look up a YouTube or two from when he's on the 700 Club, find out who he quotes. I mean, this shouldn't be that hard.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. A few more minutes with him talking about media use of the term evangelical Catholic. Stay tuned.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the CLCC.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a Confessional Lutheran. The CLCC.org.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington. Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas. St. Paul's Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Raleigh, North Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland. Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas. St. John's Lutheran, Maple Grove, Minnesota. Grace Lutheran, Parker, Colorado. And Our Redeemer Lutheran, Harrington, Kansas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest for a few more minutes. Then we're going to be talking about the book of Job, teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel. Terry, I'm wondering, kind of in a more general sense, and I know that you didn't want to stray off into Donald Trump territory too much today, but can Mike Pence, whether it's his religious views or whatever they may be, can he get any attention as long as Donald Trump is standing in the room?
Depends on whether he makes any mistakes or plagiarizes anybody, right? I mean, the vice presidential candidate is supposed to help you win a state, except here's a man who's in so much trouble in his state, both with the left and with a lot of evangelicals, that some people thought running for vice president was a smart move since he couldn't get reelected as governor of Indiana. We'll have to see. I mean, running mates can turn into serious problems. Sarah Palin got a little bit of attention, you know, while she was running. That was a joke. We're all supposed to fall down laughing at that point. But Pence doesn't strike me as being as exciting or controversial as Sarah Palin. Trump, now, I mean, as supposedly a baby Christian who hasn't been going to church anywhere, and I'm not aware of any ministers being snuck into Mar-a-Lago, unless it's Paula, his pastor, supposed pastor. At this point, would you believe almost anything that came out of the press about the religion of Donald Trump?
Probably.
Or anything that came out of Trump in terms of his religious views? Would you take any of it seriously at this point?
Probably not. I'm also wondering here, Terry, about what I think is a custom-made gotcha question, if the media wanted one, on a religious angle for Mike Pence. And that has to do with the thing that evangelicals criticize him for the most, his fumbling, in essence, handing over the ball on religious liberty in his own state.
Right. Well, he certainly did that. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway has said that the primary thing that demonstrated was a lack of courage. If you want to be kind to him, you would have to say that politicians who attempted to do compromises on religious liberty and sexual liberty faced a completely different ballgame in 2014, 2015 than they faced in 2012, 2013. And the game changer there was the entering of major corporations into the dispute. There were some very interesting and effective compromises developed in places like Hawaii and Kansas. And even in 2015, with the help of the Mormon Church, this is the subject of my column this week for Universal, you had a very interesting compromise where both gay rights groups and the Mormon Church were both willing to make major compromises in order to hang on to their primary goals. That's exactly what it's getting harder and harder to do in our culture. And what genuinely seems to have happened, and what just the truck that ran over Governor Pence clearly was the entering of major corporations into this discussion. I mean, even including in some cases like corporations we think of as conservative, like Walmart. I mean, all of a sudden, corporate America has decided to go morally libertarian rather than get pulled into these disputes and start taking it on the chin day after day after day from the media. So you can blame him for lack of courage, and frankly, I kind of do, but he was trying to deal with this issue right at the moment when the entire game changed. And that's hard, and that's when people really do have to display courage if they happen to have it.
I'm wondering, do you expect the media to push Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton on her religious beliefs, as they have up to this point Republican candidate Donald Trump?
Well, they don't have to, because she's written about it herself. In her case, she has a very consistent, stated religious worldview, religious past. It's been demonstrated. She's been walking in and out of Foundry United Methodist Church in Washington, D.C. for years. She doesn't really have any questions to answer, because she knows who she is and she knows her identity. She is a liberal, feminist, United Methodist. She loves to say Methodism is the cornerstone of her whole, you know, social issues worldview, especially in terms of justice and social change and helping your neighbor. She has a better track record there than Obama, you know, who kind of developed that late in his career, you know, when he begins to enter the public eye there and tries to reconcile his past with the black church. Hillary doesn't have a lot of questions to answer on that front, because liberal Christians love her, because they know she has stated repeatedly, "I'm one of you." So I don't know. I don't think there'll be many questions asked about that, because she's already answered them.
The major weakness here that we've discussed of the media's coverage of religion is that it has a political framework.
Right.
In your opinion, with about a minute, what can be done to sharpen their lens on this so that it's not politics only?
Well, first of all, I think they really do need to ask those practical questions. Instead of assuming that the sum total of a person's religious life is their political views on 2 to 3 issues that we can Google, I think it would be actually interesting to find out what does it mean for them and for their family to live this stuff. And if that means prying, if that means getting a little bit personal about their religious affiliations and people that they hang out with and people, authors they read, preachers they admire, once again, you've got the Mattingly questions that I talk about over and over. How do you spend your time? How do you spend your money? How do you make your decisions? The time thing, you're going to have to follow them around a little bit. You're going to have to kind of look at the practical side. The money, you can actually trace some of their donations and giving, you know, in tax records and stuff like that, which gets us back to Trump and his taxes. And this how do you make your decisions has to do with who do you admire, who influences you, who are the people close to you. In the case of George W. Bush, it was who are you reading? He actually read a lot, and it was pretty easy to find out what he was reading because his staff didn't mind talking about it. Pretend they're people instead of politicians for a minute and ask some normal person in a pew people questions.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.